Janice sat up suddenly. Stop! Quiet! Don't you hear something funny? The hilarity paused, and a long, low wail rising to a screech filled the air. They rushed through the living room to the kitchen. Thad was by the dumbwaiter. He turned a white face over his shoulder. A loud scratching and scrabbling was going on from somewhere deep below. I didn't mean to! I didn't mean to! He shouted as another wail rose out of the well. And she isn't hurt! She just doesn't like it! Doesn't like what? You didn't mean what? Janice shoved him aside and poked her head into the blackness. Who's down there? Who isn't hurt? Now scrabbling and wailing together came up the well. Mittens! Wept Thad. Mittens! Cried the others, aghast. How'd she get down there? Demanded Janice. Did you put her there? Let's get her up. She grabbed the crank and began to turn it. It spun in her hand. Nothing's happening. That's just it. The rope's come off the pulley, and she wants to get out. I don't blame her, Janice said grimly. What did you ever do a fool thing like that for? Get a flashlight, ordered Kenny. We can't. The only one that isn't lost has the batteries dead, said Marcy. She crowded her head into the cupboard beside Janice's. We're here, Mittens, she called as soothingly as she could. We'll get you out. It's all right. We'll get you out in a minute. What a stupid idiot, fumed Janice.
The author of that conversation was Jacqueline Jackson, but it could be you.
The Author Is You, a Wisconsin School of the Air series about the process of writing creatively, is conducted this semester by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. To begin today's program, here's Ken Ost.
The title of the session today, Jackie, is eavesdrop. And I think at the outset, I want your definition of the word eavesdrop or eavesdropping.
Well, eavesdrop is a marvelous word. I don't quite understand the drop part of it. It's you're sort of standing there. It means listening at windows and listening under the eaves at cracks in the door. It's got a certain secrecy to it. And I'm using it today in the sense of listening in. I have a young friend whose mother told me about when she came home from school one day very much upset and said this to her. I like my teacher so much and she's so interesting, and I was just standing there listening to her talk to someone. And she looked at me and she said, Heather, you know it's not polite to listen in on other people's conversation. I went away and I cried. It was just because I thought she was so interesting. Well, now that pierced me to the heart, because I have found things interesting too, and I like to listen in on things, but I've discovered that everything that's interesting, you can't listen in on. People discover you're listening in and they lower their voices, or there's sorts of things that you shouldn't be hearing, and so they go away or something like that. But we're talking about being writers and how to write, and writers use words. And the main way that we come in contact with words is through hearing them, listening to them, and listening to conversations. You hear some reading out loud and TV and radio and so forth, but I think our main contact with words is through listening and then through reading. Probably most people hear more than they read through with the eye. And these words are the tools of our trade, so to speak. Carpenters use nails and cooks use eggs and flour, but a writer has to deal with words and with conversations. And it seems to me that the main way of getting genuine, interesting, lifelike, realistic conversation is to listen to it.
And this is the conflict, because you mentioned the word polite. This is not polite to do, and yet at the same time, in a sense, the person who is being listened to should be flattered that his conversation is interesting enough so that somebody wants to eavesdrop.
Yes.
And yet if you can't eavesdrop, as you point out, and you want to learn how to write and use conversation, how can you listen in? How do we listen?
Of course, there's always the conversation that's to you,
mm-hmm.
but then you're part of it, and you're shaping it. And there are certain kinds of conversation that you would never be able to participate in, and those are the kind where you can learn a lot, say, in the way people talk and in the things they talk about and how they handle their relationship with each other and so forth. There's a very fine book that I've mentioned before called Harriet the Spy, but I haven't said much about it. Harriet is a kid of 10 years old or so, and she is growing up to be a spy. This is what she wants to be when she grows up. But she wants just as much to be a writer. They sort of go hand in hand, because with the spying, she has to take notes and she has to write things down.
Rather unusual ambition.
Well, Harriet is a rather unusual little girl. But she carries this notebook around with her, and she's got her spy route. And every night after school, she goes around and goes to her certain spy spots behind a certain grocery store, where she peeks through a window and listens into the conversations of the family and notes down what has happened since the last time she's been there. And she's got some bored rich people that she listens in on, and she's got various people, and she is busily learning how to spy by taking down these notes. Well, I've encouraged my kids, and I've encouraged a lot of kids, to keep what we call Harriet notebooks, or journals, where you put down the sorts of things that Harriet is putting down. Observations on people, thoughts about situations, this sort of thing. Conversations. I myself am very fond of conversations. When somebody tells me a story, I would like them to give me the he says's and she says's. And if they don't do it, then I say, well, then what did you say next? And then what did he say? I would much rather hear the direct words of the conversation. And I think it's also true in people reading a book. When I was a kid, and even now, when I'd pick up a book, I'd riffle through it. And if it was all great long paragraphs, I wasn't as inclined to read it as if it was conversation. And I would start to read the conversation, and if it was interesting conversation, it's like salted peanuts. You can't quit. What one person says leads you on to what the next person says, leads you back to what the first person says, and so forth. There's a very true line, I think, at the beginning of Alice in Wonderland, where she looks over her sister's shoulder there on the riverbank, and her sister is reading a book, and Alice turns away because she says, "What good is a book without pictures or conversation?" So here is this problem of conversation, and how are you going to gather conversation into your Harriet notebook, into your own person, so that you can write vivid, interesting, real conversations, not like those crummy conversations in the first grade readers. "Father, what did you bring me from the store or from business or whatever it is?" One reason those little first grade readers are so boring is because they're so unreal. Nobody talks the way they talk in those old-fashioned readers.
Where do you draw the line now between conversations that you may well listen to and those that you probably shouldn't listen to? Now, I'm sure you yourself, and certainly me, are saying things at times that we don't want other people to listen
other
in
on. Other people to listen in, yeah. I'm sure. Well, I talked to my daughter's fifth grade class last year. We were talking about Harriet and about eavesdropping. And I said to them, I said, "Now, I don't want to turn you all into little sneaks." But then the hands began waving. And I realized, as they came up with story after story, that there wasn't a thing that Harriet could teach them. All those kids were adept at sitting at the top of the stairs in the dark and listening to adult conversation going on downstairs, at being behind couches, at picking up the telephone and listening into their big sister's conversation over the telephone with her boyfriend.
That's kind of perilous, though.
Well, it is perilous. And
the last one especially, I mean.
And sometimes you get an earful of things that you shouldn't hear for your own good as well as for the people that are talking, and this is a danger. But I think that there are plenty of ways that you can listen into conversation without being sneaky about it. The way that I have discovered that is the most effective for listening in on conversations is to act like you're not listening in on conversations. It's amazing what people will say in front of you if they don't think you're listening. And most people have the idea that if you're listening, you're looking. So if you sit and look at somebody, they assume you're listening. I heard a marvelous conversation in a dime store a couple of years back. Two little kids were there with their mothers, two little girls. And the mothers were busy talking to each other, and the two little girls were talking to each other. And the older of the little girl was saying to the younger one, and they were probably 5 and 4, "But you do like me, you do like me." And the other one said, "No, I don't." And then this girl, even more agitated, she said, "But you have to like me, I'm your friend, I'm nice, you do like me." "I don't like you." Then the older girl would pull on her mother's coat and wail to the mother, "Mother, she says she doesn't like me, she doesn't like me." The mother couldn't pay any less attention to the kid if she were 1,000 miles away. She just brushed the kid off and went on talking to the other mother. Well, here was a very dramatic little scene going on. This younger 4-year-old was wrapping the older kid right around her little finger by pretending, or else actually being true about it, that she didn't care about this older kid. And the older kid was devastated. I followed that little scene all the way around the dime store, watching the callousness of the mothers, paying no attention to the kids, seeing the other little kid, the older kid, get more and more and more upset, the younger kid get more and more smug about the whole situation as she saw what power she had, just in her words. Well, what was I doing? Was I going along, you see, flapping my ears and looking at their faces? No, I was looking at everything in the dime store. I was fingering things off the counter. I was just staying, you know, close to this little group.
Very good, very good.
If you're reading, if you're sitting on a bus and reading a magazine, you can listen very well to the people around you. In most situations, if you're reading, people will think that you can't do two things at once. Well, maybe you aren't even reading. Maybe you're just listening, and the reading is a dodge. So there's a way.
Thinking back to my earlier days, a bus is a great spot to listen to conversation. That's true, yes. Marvelous.
Yes, and if you're sitting right behind somebody, they don't know what you're doing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So that here is a way. I would guess for boys sitting around a barber shop, you would hear all sorts of interesting things.
That's very true.
And you begin to discover things about speech when you begin listening to them. Mm-hmm. For instance, you discover that people talk very differently, that some people speak in a monotone, both in their tone of voice and in the things they say. Over and over again, the same words, the same cliches, the same ideas, exceedingly dull.
Earlier you mentioned that you preferred, when somebody was telling you about something that happened, you preferred them to quote the people that were involved, that he said so-and-so, and then she said so-and-so, and he said so-and-so, rather than telling you exactly in a story or the narrative of what happened. Now, you apparently think that's more effective. Now, why do you look for conversations? Or do you think it's more effective?
I think it's a lot more fun.
Ah.
And here's why, at least some of the reasons. For one thing, it's more direct. You're hearing their words as exactly as the person telling the story can remember. And so, therefore, instead of getting it secondhand, you're getting it, you know, almost firsthand. And this allows you to interpret the situation for yourself. You're not being told what that person thought. You're hearing his words, and so you can then interpret for yourself what he thought, and then what your friend who is telling you the story thought when he said this back, so that you are having to do more work, so to speak. You are exercising your own brain cells in interpreting the situation. Now, I find that this is true in my writing, too. I find it a lot more fun to write conversation and to see how much I can put across to the reader, which the reader will then have to exercise his own mind to see how much he can get out of it, than in writing just straight exposition and in telling the reader what he's supposed to think. You see, I can plant the clues in the conversation, tell the story, so to speak, in the conversation, and I find this is more challenging to write, more fun to write, and more the way life really is. There isn't somebody that's standing off in the wings interpreting things for us as we go along. We're having to do that interpreting ourselves up in our heads. So that when I read a book, I don't like the writer to tell me what's going on. Let the action tell me. Let the conversation tell me. And this is why I find that I enjoy conversation more, and both in reading and writing it. It demands more of me.
Now, as you write conversation, I suspect that you want to get across to the reader the feelings and the tones. So you use certain words. I think you read one a little while ago. So-and-so said something soothingly, as soothingly as possible. Many words like that in order to express the tone that's happening.
Yes.
Do you find you have problems in figuring out which words to use or to make a variety of words in this area?
I think that the main problem is putting in too many of those sorts of words.
Mm.
That when I rewrite something, I go back and take out a lot of my words that tell how the speech sounded, because that's an insult to the reader's intelligence. If somebody screams something, you don't need to say he screamed it angrily. Let the words tell you that he screamed it angrily. The more I write, the more I find the conversation can carry it with just a word in now and then to the reader to let you know attitudes and tones and expressions and how things are going.
Well, now, when you want to write about the adventures and so on, you want to use conversation. How do you get going on this? How do you use it, really? How do you move the story along by a conversation?
Well, I'd suggest, first of all, don't necessarily start out with a story, although you can do that simultaneously. I'd say the first thing to do is to try writing some conversation and see how much you've got in your head. I say that I've encouraged our kids to keep Harriet notebooks, but in a way we all have Harriet notebooks in our heads that we have been listening all our lives. Some of us have been listening well and some of us have been listening carelessly. And you may discover, if you say, okay, now I'm going to write down a conversation, that you've really been a pretty good listener. You can make up a conversation, but it's going to sound real. It isn't going to sound stilted. And this might be a fun exercise to see how much realistic conversation you've got in your head. Start out with something interesting, like a good fight. At the same time, or you know, after school tonight or tomorrow, take your journal, take your Harriet notebook, and begin listening in on conversations. Get some little kids' conversations, and get some grown-ups' conversations, and some of your contemporary conversations, and write down some real ones. You'll probably find this hard because people talk faster than you can write.
Mm-hmm.
But you can discover abbreviations and hit the key phrases and things like that. And begin listening and seeing what sort of speech people have, how they talk. I'd say don't go and listen to TV for it, because somebody has written that, and I don't think most TV writers listen to people's speech either, so that they're pretty fakey. They sound made up and stilted. Get some, you know, fresh, live conversations. Well, then, for using them in stories, maybe you'll hit a conversation that would make a good story, or a takeoff, or a beginning for a good story. That's fine. But another thing you might do is then to make up your own conversation or to write a story that uses a whole lot of conversation. See how much of the story you can tell in speech rather than having to tell the reader what's going on. See how much of it you can do in the speech.
How can you tell if the conversation you've written is fakey or if it really sounds like real conversation? Can you read it over yourself and will that help? Do you do that?
I do that a lot, yeah.
Read it aloud.
I read it aloud, or I read it listening with my mind's ear to the tone of it.
Mm-hmm.
And fix it up where it sounds, where it hits me as false. But you can try it out, out loud, see how it goes.
That sounds good. That sounds like a great idea. And if any of you authors out there are having fun with conversations, why, let us in. Let us know about it. Okay?
This has been a program in the creative writing series, The Author Is You, conducted this semester by children's author Jacqueline Jackson. Your reader is Ken Ost. This is the Wisconsin School of the Air.